Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio to schedule an English language broadcast, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from France 24, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, NHK Japan, and Radio Havana Cuba. We will begin with France 24. Talk of a secret peace plan for Ukraine, negotiated by the United States and Russia without Ukraine, angered many European leaders. The day before, the French President Macron and Zelensky had announced an agreement for Ukraine to buy 100 French top-end fighter jets. Then a press review of the British papers commenting on what is being called the most sweeping asylum policy overhaul of modern times in England, making it much tougher on refugees in the UK. France 24.
Top European ministers angry and mystified over talk of a secret peace plan for Ukraine. Convening in Brussels, one after another, they demanded Russia and the United States stop cutting them out.
There can be no peace without Ukraine, and Europe has to be at the table.
Questions about whether shift of land and territory should be a part of a peace must not be negotiated, you know, without the Ukrainians.
And it's, of course, Europe's security that's at stake, so we expect to be consulted.
The reported outline of the U.S.-Russia negotiated peace plan includes many of Russia's key demands, significant territorial concessions by Ukraine, cutting Ukrainian troop levels in half, and forbidding any NATO forces in the country. All factors Russia claims are essential to its future security.
Russia continues to remain open to a settlement, but the settlement must lead to the elimination of the root causes of this conflict. That's what we talk about all the time.
European support for Ukraine is not unanimous. On Thursday, Hungary, which has a cozy relationship with Russia, said EU efforts are fruitless.
The war has been going on for almost 4 years now, and Russia has been occupying more and more Ukrainian territories. Plus, the sanctions have not pushed the Russian economy on its knees. So I think saying that the time is on the side of Ukraine is an illusion.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says Ukraine's territorial sovereignty and security are a matter of the country's survival. But with Russia's ceaseless bombings and a corruption scandal knocking Ukraine on its heels, Russia may hope it can exploit the weakness and force Ukraine and Europe.
Well, as we've heard coming out earlier in the day, the statement of intent was signed by both leaders for Ukraine to acquire 100 Rafale fighter jets. This is the most modern type of fighter jet in the French fleet. France have already provided three of its predecessors of the Mirage 2000s in the past, but this is part of an upgrade, as well as 8 SAMP-T mobile surface air missile systems and ground fire guided missiles. Now, we're honing in heavily on the Rafales because that's obviously the big ticket announcement. Now, Rafale takes 3 years, 3.5 years to manufacture, and in principle, it takes 5 years to train a good, competent Rafale pilot. So the two leaders explained that this investment is not necessarily about combating the current threats that face Ukraine this winter. They reaffirmed as well that the French and Ukrainian wish is for a ceasefire as soon as possible. But that the Ukrainian army, in order to have proper deterrence, in order to be able to fend off future risks and guarantee security after a ceasefire, it needs to be convincing, it needs to have credible air defence, and Rafales are an essential part of that, was very much the line of the two leaders as they pushed through this historic deal.
Dipti's going to delve now into the British papers. I'm sure you can tell what she's going to talk about, focusing on just one story. The government calls the most sweeping asylum policy overhaul of modern times.
Yeah, that's right. We'll take you through some of the reactions. Now, the Interior Minister, Shabana Mahmood, unveiled the government's hardline plans for asylum seekers that include making refugee status temporary, quadrupling the time for refugees to settle permanently to 20 years, and speeding up the deportations of those who came illegally. Now, the tough approach aiming to halt the rise of the far right in Britain. As you can see here, The Guardian calling it a hardline asylum plans, and Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, facing Labour revolt for putting forward these plans. It has found some support, at least from the right-wing papers, which the Daily Express, this right-wing paper here, saying it's a step in the right direction. But as you can imagine, a lot of criticism from on the left, the Independent, the centre-left paper here, saying that the Labour would ramp up deportations by overriding European human rights legislation. And in its front page article here, it quotes an anti-torture campaigner who says that political parties in the UK are trying to outdo each other in their cruelty towards refugees.
Those reports and press review were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as on a YouTube channel called France 24 English. Also, most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. United Nations climate talks at COP30 in Brazil have drawn thousands of activists from around the world. Their demand is for real action, not just words on climate justice and change. We'll hear a report by Tim Schoenberg on the scope of the protest and whether they are having an effect on the direction of the conference. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
The UN climate talks in Brazil are facing increasing disruption from protesters. Thousands have joined a so-called Great People's March outside the conference venue. They're demanding real action rather than just words on global warming.
The Great People's March on its way to COP30. Some wore red to symbolise the blood of those fighting to protect the environment. The march was made up of climate activists from all over the world, South American indigenous groups, as well as a smattering of anti-capitalists, anti-imperialists, and anti-war protesters. Each group had a slightly different angle, but ultimately all were calling for climate justice and the defence of indigenous ancestral lands threatened by illegal logging and mining.
We don't want more projects that will kill our Xingu River. It's dying and they still want to build more mines and more dams. Enough is enough. We don't want any more of this on our river.
Stop deceiving us. Stop the deals with large mining and oil companies. We're here to defend Mother Nature, to defend the grandmother that is the sea. We do not want any more privatization of our Mother Nature. We do not want privatization of water.
I'm here to denounce the false climate solutions being negotiated in Belém, especially all the carbon markets and financial mechanisms. They don't address the climate crisis at all.
We're marching for our natural resources, for our lives, for our forests, for our Amazonia. We came all the way from Venezuela to fight, to preserve our natural resources. We will not give up.
This is the first time in 4 years that protests have taken place at the UN climate talks. The last three rounds were held in Egypt, Dubai, and Azerbaijan, where authorities are less tolerant towards public demonstrations. The protesters outside the conference are pushing for climate justice, while the delegates inside, including fossil fuel lobbyists, try to thrash out an agreement to mitigate climate change.
Well, let's go to Belém now and DW climate reporter Tim Schoenberg. So activists are demanding action. Is the Brazilian government actually doing anything, though?
Well, Pablo, the answer to that is definitely a mixed bag. We've heard the demands from the protesters in the report. On the other hand, we can see that the current administration under President Lula has managed to cut down deforestation in 2024 by roughly 50%. Compared to 2022, that is a large number. We see that there were landmarks, territories given to indigenous communities, other laws which would have cut their rights, what were blocked from the administration. That's on the pro side. On the con side, we see that there's a number of fossil fuel projects being granted just recently, just before this climate conference, this symbolic conference, they were approved in the Amazon. And coming back to deforestation, there is still a large number of wildfires which are not in the statistics, which also harm this very precious ecosystem and the natural resources, which are the basis of livelihood of these communities.
Zooming out from Brazil, are the protests, because obviously we've seen that it's not just protesters protesting about what's going on in Brazil, but from across the world, are they having any effect at all on the delegates and fossil fuel lobbyists who are gathered there in Belém?
Well, on fossil fuel lobbyists, I guess not, as they are paid to spread the message that fossil fuels are the future and there is no economy working without fossil fuels. So it's their job to not listen to protesters. So I guess they ignore those voices. What I cannot imagine that the energy that is literally echoing into the halls of this climate conference is overheard and ignored by the delegates. Everybody here is aware that we are in the center of the climate crisis. As you can see, the Amazon just right behind me, parts of the Amazon forest. Everybody's aware of the significance here, and everybody's aware that the pressure is high. And what we see, for example, from the presidency itself, the president do Lago, he is trying to make a step towards the protesters. He will meet them. He's going to have conversations in public. They will hand over a manifesto, their demands. So at least on the symbolic side, the presidency here and Brazil is trying to show that it wants to communicate, that it wants to listen, and that it shows respect to those demands. How much of that is going to dribble in a final decision here, that is to be seen.
DW climate reporter Tim Schauenberg in Belém in Brazil.
That report and interview are from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary, as well as most podcast sites. On to NHK World Radio Japan. The new Prime Minister of Japan, Sanae Takanichi, created serious tension with China by suggesting that a Chinese attack on Taiwan would threaten Japan. China had agreed to import Japanese seafood recently, but stopped after the Prime Minister's remarks on Taiwan. Toyota will invest nearly $1 billion in 5 factories in the U.S., making hybrid and electric cars. The Israeli military killed 13 people in a Palestinian refugee camp in Lebanon. Israel carried out aerial attacks across Gaza on Wednesday, killing another 25. NHK Japan.
China will postpone trilateral ministerial meetings with Japan and South Korea amid the Tokyo-Beijing row on Prime Minister Takaichi Sanae's remarks on Taiwan. South Korean sources say Beijing notified Seoul on Tuesday about the postponement of culture and tourism meetings, which were set to be held next week in Macau.
A Japanese leader publicly made incorrect comments on the Taiwan issue, hurting the feelings of the Chinese people. The comments were a provocation towards the post-war international order and undermined the foundation and atmosphere for the three countries' cooperation. The conditions for holding the meetings are not currently in place.
Earlier this month, Takaichi told Diet members a military emergency involving Taiwan could be considered something that would threaten Japan's survival. The three-way meetings were held in South Korea in 2023, followed by one last year in Japan. South Korea's Yonhap News Agency reported the view that if a diplomatic row between Japan and China drags on, it would be difficult to hold the next trilateral summit Japan plans to chair. We turn now to Japanese seafood. China has only just resumed imports after a two-year suspension, but officials are taking it off the menu once again. Sources in Tokyo say Beijing's notification does not refer to an ongoing diplomatic fallout between the two sides. But it does reportedly cite concerns about treated and diluted water released from the crippled Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant in northeastern Japan. The facility suffered a triple meltdown during the March 2011 earthquake and tsunami. Water used to cool molten fuel has been mixing with rain and groundwater. Workers are treating it to remove most radioactive substances, but tritium remains. They also dilute the treated water before releasing it into the ocean. Tritium levels are reduced to about 1/7 of the World Health Organization's guidance for drinking water. Chinese officials suspended imports of Japanese marine products when the release began in August 2023. But in June this year, they said they would lift the measure, except products from 10 prefectures. Marine shipments from Japan to China resumed earlier this month. Beijing's sudden decision to halt imports again follows recent comments by Japanese Prime Minister Takaichi Sanae. She told lawmakers a military emergency involving Taiwan could be considered a threat to Japan's survival. Beijing demanded a retraction. Now, senior Japanese and Chinese diplomats met Tuesday in an attempt to ease the simmering situation. They made little headway. Japanese Foreign Ministry official Kanai Masaaki traveled to Beijing to meet his Chinese counterpart Liu Jingsong. Kanai rejected China's decision to issue travel advisories for its citizens in the wake of Takaichi's comments. And he denied Chinese nationals in Japan are facing an increased risk to their safety.
Toyota Motor says it will invest over $900 million in the United States to boost production of its hybrid vehicles. It's part of the automaker's five-year plan to spend up to $10 billion in the country. Toyota on Tuesday announced an investment of $912 million across five plants in the U.S. The firm says the funds will help meet growing demand for hybrids. One facility in the state of West Virginia will get over $450 million, the largest amount. The money will be used to upgrade equipment for hybrid-compatible engines and other parts production. Toyota says it will start making hybrid versions of its flagship model Corolla at its plant in Mississippi State. The facility will start producing the first U.S.-made electrified Corollas in 2028. Toyota says the investment will create more than 250 jobs in the country.
The Israeli military has launched an airstrike in southern Lebanon, leaving 13 people dead. Israel said a Hamas training compound was the target, but the Islamic group denied such a facility exists. The Israel Defense Forces said Tuesday it struck a compound Hamas was using to train fighters. The IDF said it used precision munitions to mitigate harm to civilians. But Lebanon's health authorities claimed the strike was aimed at a Palestinian refugee camp. Hamas condemned the attack, which it said targeted a group of young men in a sports field. Its statement said no military installations exist at the site. Other recent Israeli airstrikes were aimed at Lebanon-based Shia Muslim group Hezbollah amid ongoing regional instability. In other news, Israel says it carried out aerial attacks across Gaza on Wednesday in response to gunfire that violated their fragile truce. Authorities in the enclave say it left 25 people dead and 77 injured. The Israeli military says its troops came under fire in the Gazan city of Khan Yunis. Palestinian media say both Khan Yunis in the south and Gaza City in the north came under attack. The latest casualties add to concerns last month's ceasefire is fraying. Gaza's health authorities say at least 280 people have been killed since the truce took effect as Israeli forces continue their assaults on the strip. Hamas condemned the latest attacks as a dangerous escalation and accused Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of seeking to resume the genocide against Palestinian people. Hamas denied firing at Israeli troops and called on the United States and mediators, including Qatar, to press Israel to honor the ceasefire terms.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at 11735 or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp. All the times they announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. NHK may be also found at most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this show, like subscribers in Nevada and Cleveland did this week, PayPal contact information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Your donations are essential for this weekly production and distribution of the show, which I supply freely to more than 100 radio stations around the world. And if you're listening on a public radio station, please support them as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. Venezuelan President Maduro criticized the president of Trinidad and Tobago for allowing the installation of U.S. military on their territory, which is 15 kilometers offshore from Venezuela. The United Nations Security Council approved a U.S. plan for a so-called stabilization force in Gaza, directed by a board of peace chaired by Donald Trump. Russia denounced the plan, which has no Palestinian input. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro, has denounced on his weekly program, Con Maduro Plus, that the Prime Minister of Trinidad and Tobago is seriously jeopardizing the peace of the Caribbean by authorizing the installation of a foreign military force on its territory with the aim of threatening Venezuela. The Venezuelan head of state affirmed that this action represents a mortgage on Trinidadian sovereignty by granting control of its waters and territory located only 15 kilometers from the Venezuelan coast for hostile purposes aimed at destabilizing the region. Maduro stressed that this unilateral measure undermines the historic brotherhood between the two nations. He said, "We have shared history spanning centuries." And he emphasized while questioning the legal basis that would allow the Prime Minister of Trinidad and Tobago to make such a significant decision, ultimately without consulting her own defense institutions. The Venezuelan president warned that this policy constitutes a misstep against peace, and cautioned about the serious consequences it will have for the Caribbean region, declared a zone of peace. He also emphasized the profound rejection of this measure by the people of Trinidad and Tobago. The Venezuelan president's denunciation comes amid a climate of growing tension. Former Prime Minister of Trinidad and Tobago, Dr. Keith Rowley, stated that his current government, led by Kamala Persad Bashar, is exposing the country to conflict by allowing military exercises with U.S. forces on Trinidad and Tobago land without proper consultation. Rowley, the former prime minister, pointed out that the presence of foreign troops could make the country's offshore platforms legitimate targets in a confrontation scenario. This warning comes in response to the announcement of joint maneuvers between local forces and the U.S. 22nd Marine Expeditionary Unit. Trinidadian Foreign Minister Sean Sobers insisted that the exercises were not related to Venezuela. However, local military sources in Trinidad and Tobago informed the Guardian media that senior commanders had not been notified beforehand about the scope of the operations. In this context, President Nicolas Maduro of Venezuela has responded to statements by U.S. President Donald Trump regarding possible talks. The Venezuelan president reiterated that differences can only be resolved through diplomacy, and he ruled out any intervention, stating, "Anyone who wants to talk to Venezuela must do so face-to-face." Well, as we reported yesterday on Tuesday, the United Nations Security Council on Monday approved a U.S.-backed plan for so-called International Stabilization Force in Gaza. 13 council members of the Security Council voted in favor of the resolution, while China and Russia abstained, warning that the plan excludes Palestinians from meaningful participation and fails to define any clear role for the United Nations in shaping Gaza's future. Under the plan, military soldiers from Arab and Muslim-majority nations would oversee the disarmament of Hamas and other armed Palestinian resistance groups in Gaza. The force would answer to a newly created so-called Board of Peace, chaired by U.S. President Donald Trump. Hamas has rejected the resolution outright, saying that it imposes an international guardianship mechanism on the Gaza Strip, sidelining the will of Palestinians. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, meanwhile, praised the UN approval of Trump's plan, but also called for a provision that provides a path to Palestinian statehood as unacceptable. Yesterday, on Tuesday, protesters gathered outside the U.S. mission to the United Nations in Manhattan, in New York, to reject the resolution. The Palestine Youth Movement said, "We see through this thinly veiled attempt to strip the Palestinian people of their sovereignty, self-determination, and the right of return." Russia has slammed the controversial U.S.-backed plan to deploy a so-called International Stabilization Force in Gaza, saying it is reminiscent of colonial practices and risks sidelining and absolutely forgetting the Palestinians. The UN Security Council on Monday passed this resolution establishing the International Force in Gaza. Favored by the Trump administration, it received 13 votes in favor, with Russia and China abstaining. Russia circulated a proposal with stronger language supporting a Palestinian state, stressing that the West Bank and Gaza must be joined as a state under the Palestinian rule. Russia's ambassador to the United Nations said on Tuesday that Moscow abstained because the proposal lacked transparency, excluded Palestinian input, and granted Washington excessive control over Gaza under the guise of peacekeeping. The ambassador of Russia to the United Nations warned that the international force could become a fig leaf for unbridled experiences and experiments conducted by the United States in Israel in the occupied Palestinian territory. According to the UN ambassador to the United Nations from Russia, the force would appear to be able to act absolutely autonomously without any regard for the position or the opinion of the Palestinian people.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcasts. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Standard Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You do have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for the show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.